Welcome to Copenhagen Daily, reporting from the Bella Center in Copenhagen, on what is undoubtedly the most important meeting in human history.
Okay, this is Tom, first report from Wednesday 16th action. We're down at Tarnby Station, probably about 600 or 700 people here, perhaps. We're waiting for the big bus to turn up. Very jovial feeling, clowns running around, making a nuisance of themselves. There's a big circle of drummers, lots of call and response shouts going up. Everyone does kind of wonder where this is all going.
What are you here for?
Yeah, going to meet hopefully thousands of people who recognise the illegitimacy and inefficacy of what's going on in the Bella Centre. Lots of the NGOs have been kicked out today. Friends of the Earth isn't allowed in anymore, and if they don't join this march, then shame on them.
We love green, but we love profit more. We love green, but we love profit more.
I'm being offered some grapes on a silver platter by a woman dressed in a white dress holding a sign that says, Bangladesh, buy rubber boots. And they're chanting that they love the green, but they love profit more. Someone's got a sign saying, Africa, stop whining. I think these must be the bankers.
So we're coming up to the Bella Centre. We're quite close now, a few hundred metres. We're going to be coming in on the side where the delegates enter, where they've all been queuing up all week. And we can see the big wind turbine, the Vestas turbine in front of us. We're surrounded by police on both sides. There's quite a few police, there's hundreds of them.
And, do you think this will influence the negotiations inside?
Well, I don't. Is it about influencing the negotiations? I think it could do in a way. There's 130 world leaders here today. That's the biggest grouping of world leaders that we've ever seen. Telling them that this process isn't working and we need system change, not climate change, is pretty important, I think.
We've just arrived at the Bella Centre. Everyone's very happy about it, no trouble so far. Lots of cheering, there are big signs being wrapped around some of the artworks outside. It's saying democracy in Copenhagen and equality for the world. It's all good.
Oh, it's just a bit breathtaking, really.
I'm at the front now. Camera crews being pushed back by the police. The police seem fairly disorganised. Jagged lines of officers, not quite sure what to do. Protesters seem to be pushing through. Now they're forcing us back a bit. A couple, they've all got their batons out actually. Officers are pulling people off vans. They're throwing girls on the floor. It's getting very aggressive. One protester has been hit by pepper spray, and he looks fairly composed, but just he's just not stopping crying, and he keeps on clutching his head, can't open his eyes. Horrible stuff. The demonstration has been announced illegal, and therefore the delegates from inside the Bella Centre who are trying to come out and join us are being arrested as they leave. Apparently some are still persevering and trying to link up with us. We're not inside the compound, but we're next to a van that's got a speaker system in it, and we're holding it up against the police. The police have a line that runs from the front of the van and curves round to the entrance, and behind the van there are many people dancing and singing. It's very peaceful, and people just want to see the right thing happen. Okay, so there's one brilliant action there where they've lashed a load of inflatable mattresses together and made a pontoon that stretches across the ditch. It was kind of like a small river into the Bella Centre. It looks like a couple of people got by and they were arrested straight away, so again, efforts. to have a People's Assembly closed down by police.
So don't you think that our leaders who are there already are speaking on our behalf?
They're speaking on the behalf of the corporation, they're speaking on the behalf of economic growth, and the security protocol, greenhouse gas emissions have risen by 17%. So, and the mechanisms like the clean development mechanisms are a way to help corporations to save money. And you want to talk about real climate solutions.
It's fairly incredible how this many people, so few people, can hold up against helicopters and police vans and batons and pepper spray. And it's an incredible effort, and people just aren't giving up. They're forming chains around areas that they think are going to help facilitate the People's Assembly. Although it seems like the Danish government is doing everything it can to inhibit a democratic and free discussion of the problems that should be discussed inside the Bella Centre, they're doing this because they believe in it, and they'll do whatever it takes to get their voice heard.
The right to demonstrate is the basic need of people living together, and this basic need has been destroyed by the policemen.
We are green, we are red, we are black. We have come to take the power back. We are black, we are green, we are red. We remember what cancer we were said. Lord, take my soul, the struggle continues. Even if we're nursing the no-deal blues. Sub-Zero carnivals have always been my thing. My cozy pink and silver dancing boots I'll be sure to bring. On a pyre of profit, my future they want to fling. But into being such sweet songs our street souls will sing. Street souls will sing. Black, we are red, we are green. But can we crystallize that which we dream? We dream of oceans unrisen and our friends out of prison and a hurricane of climate justice blowing and of human kindness overflowing. I think it's gonna rain today. Sub-Zero carnivals have always been my thing. My cozy pink and silver dancing boots I'll be sure to bring. possibility. Our movements crackle and zing. We have brought the righteous rhythms to make those movements swing. Make the movement swing. Reclaimed our hope, but we come back with some seeds and some good ideas and some stories and some myths to tell. Watch me over. We're gonna bring him back, gonna bring him back and put him down. Come on back and put him down, build him up. Build him up, bring it back in, yeah. Bring him back and build him up, yeah. To build it up, bring it back in, yeah. Bring it back and build it up. Ooh. Bring it back and build it up.
Protesters had aimed to get inside the Bella Center and discuss their own solutions to climate change in a People's Assembly. However, after the failed attempt to break in, activists formed a circle in the middle of the dual carriageway and held the conference there. Some of the speakers were among the 260 arrested or prevented from joining the protest by police. However, there were several speakers from indigenous groups and underrepresented nations.
I am Alexandra Almeida, I come from Ecuador.
Venimos a denunciar que la explotación petrolera, que nada más tiene 150 años, está a punto de acabar con nuestro planeta.
We are here to denounce that fossil fuel exploitation, mainly oil exploitation, has been going on for almost 150 years, is about to finish.
Por eso estamos proponiendo que el petróleo se quede en el subsuelo.
We are proposing the oil to leave it in the ground.
Porque el único,
yes.
Yes. Porque el único petróleo que no será quemado y que no causará calentamiento global es el que se mantenga en el subsuelo.
Because the only oil that will not be causing global warming will be the one to remain in the ground.
Esa es la verdadera solución. Esa sí es una real solución. No las soluciones falsas que aquí están negociando.
That is a real solution and not the false solutions being negotiated here.
Porque la solución de un problema no puede estar dentro del sistema que causó ese problema.
Because the solution to the problem cannot be within the system that caused the problem.
Porque los campesinos,
because the farmers,
podemos enfriar el planeta con nuestra agricultura.
We can cool the planet with our agriculture.
Y podemos alimentar a la humanidad.
And we can feed the people.
Representatives of workers' movements also spoke, including one of the workers who occupied the Vestas wind turbine factory earlier this year.
I'm one of the Vestas occupiers. You probably know, you possibly don't. But basically, I'm here to say, you know, basically, when we reclaim power, we know that at the moment they are scared. This is why this is happening. When we reclaim power, we'll know that we are strong enough. At the moment, all of us have to go back and find more people.
In the democratic spirit of the assembly, it broke into groups and then reformed so people could discuss their ideas.
We're building this solidarity between movements. We know that power has always worked by dividing and ruling, and we have to be aware that it will continue to do that. The man from the trade union said that it is a desperate shame that the trade unions are not with us, but we really need to build that movement between all the different groups that see human survival as part of one whole. Thank you.
Yeah.
concrete proposal is that every time, we need to mobilize our network, our friends, our contacts, and we need to organize such that every time a politician, a local or federal or international politician, stands up to talk, somebody out there is going to ask them question, and the question, one of the questions would be, how is your target meeting the 2-degree line that you say is important to keep away catastrophic climate change? And we need to have multiple people pressing them on the same question and discrediting their answers when they have put up wrong answers to answers that are actually distracting and distorting facts. So if we are organized that way, and the media will always be following these politicians around, so if they cannot get away from these questions, their lies will be exposed. Thank you.
We started talking about spaces like this, and that creating spaces like this is incredibly important. We could have talked for weeks and weeks rather than 10 minutes. But our main conclusion is that actually the solutions are right here, that this week has been about sharing and getting inspiration from each other and showing that we have the intelligence and creativity to make the solutions that we need.
Who else? Any more delegations?
We were talking about the way that we as people are concerned about climate change communicate to people who don't spend as much time thinking and doing things about it as we do. We came up with three main things, and the first was that we shouldn't shy away from saying to people that the processes that cause climate change are the processes that cause problems that are more immediate to people's everyday lives.
Yeah.
The second point that we made was that we're good at negativity, we're very good at scaremongering and so on, but we need to be positive and have hope and share these spaces that we create with people. Not just keep them within the activist space, the activist community, but open them up to the whole public.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Welcome to Copenhagen Daily. You've been listening to a sequence put together by Tom Besley and Arthur Gerling, giving a flavour of the atmosphere at yesterday's Reclaim Power demonstration here in Copenhagen. And in the middle, you heard Carbon Town Crier's Copenhagen song, The Overflowing. Inside the conference centre yesterday, the scenes were as dramatic as they were outside. Some 115 heads of state have arrived here, and from 12 noon yesterday, they were all lined up, one after the other, to give their opening speeches. This process is so lengthy that it will be continuing today. However, presidents and prime ministers and heads of government were delayed by over half an hour as developing countries raised points of order, seeking assurances that a new text prepared by the Danish presidency would not be allowed to take precedence over the text that had been painstakingly negotiated here over the last couple of years by all country parties. Here's some of the exchanges that took place.
Your Excellencies, colleagues, honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to declare open the joint high-level segment of the Conference of the Parties as its 15th session, and the Conference of the Parties serving as the meeting of the parties to the Kyoto Protocol at its 5th session. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the presence of so many heads of state or government here in Copenhagen is indeed a clear testament that the urgency of climate change, as well as the sincerity of purpose of the international community, has reached unprecedented heights. There's a point of order. Sorry. Brazil, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. A point of order. We had the opening of the CMP in the morning. The scheduled opening of the COP did not occur. We have not received information on the report of the chair of the AWGLCA. We have not received news of the texts prepared within the AWG-LCA negotiations, and yet references were made to new texts that would be presented under the authority of the presidency. So I would like to consult you on when the COP will open, when will we receive the report of the chair of the AWG-LCA, what is the situation regarding these texts, and when will discussion begin based on the negotiated texts of the AWG-LCA? Thank you.
Okay, I will invite the Executive Secretary to take the floor, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The COP plenary will convene at 1 p.m. in plenary 2 to hear the report of the chair of the AWG-LCA and then decide how to proceed. You are correct that before this session opened, the presidency referred to a document under both the LCA and the KP. I am sure that the presidency will want to consult parties on how to take those documents forward in order to facilitate the process of advancing on all texts. The presidency is seeking to convene a meeting with parties in order to seek advice on how to proceed on the texts proposed by the Danish presidency, should parties decide that they consider those texts to be suitable for further work. I hope this clarifies things further.
Brazil.
I thank the Secretariat for those comments. However, there is an issue of substance here that is a concern. The parties negotiated yesterday into the early morning text under the AWG-LCA, and all of the parties understand that this is the text that will guide us forward. So the idea that text which is new has been prepared covering the LCA and KP issues, and that the discussion will be how to take work forward on the basis of this new text, creates the clear indication that these negotiated by parties texts are not the reference for our work. That is a concern. So the final question that I have, which I believe was not addressed, is how will work continue on the basis of the negotiated AWG-LCA texts, which parties, as I mentioned, negotiated into the early morning? Thank you.
Then I will pass the floor to India.
Thank you very much, sir. So I've taken the floor on the same point of order which has been raised by Brazil. I had, of course, pressed the button before Mr. De Boer spoke, and the issue was when the COP, in the earlier COP, you just told that the text has been prepared by the COP chair. So I was wondering about the basis. Now, very clearly, sir, time and again, we have been assured by the COP president that this is a process driven by inclusivity, transparency. It has to be party driven. It just cannot be top down, and that is the essence of multilateralism. So you will notice also from the daily program that it was the conference of the parties which was listed for 10 o'clock to be followed by the CMP. But when we came here, the CMP came first, and we didn't have the COP. Now, this, sir, is a matter of concern. Essentially, sir, it's very important that the AWG-LCA texts and in parallel on the second track, the AWG-KP, that and only that can guide us, sir. And till the morning, early wee hours of the morning, we had been working on the AWG LCA track, sir. And I hope, sir, I've been able to place India's concerns on this very clearly. Thank you, sir.
Sudan.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of the group of 77 in China, we would like to support and the statement made by Brazil, China, and India. The process we agreed upon according to the Convention, to Kyoto Protocol, Bali Action Plan, it has to be party-driven, bottom-up, transparent, double-track process, and our group, it is not respectful for us. We are not ready to accept, to rubber stamp a text or text coming out of the blue. I thank you, Mr. President.
I think the world is expecting us to reach some kind of agreement concerning climate change and not just continuing discussing procedure, procedure, procedure. I'm fully aware that many have asked for the floor, but then on the other hand, we have to move things forward. The executive secretary has just assured everyone that there will be a meeting in the AWG-LCA at 1 o'clock. Okay, there will be a COP meeting, of course, sorry, a COP meeting at 1 o'clock, where all concerns raised in regards to AWG and LCA can be addressed. And I hope that will convince everybody on the fact that we have had the idea of creating a very transparent, inclusive process. But on the other hand, we also have to move forward. And we have scheduled at 12 o'clock today, at noon o'clock today, to get the high joint session started. We have invited leaders from all over the world to take the floor. So at this point, by announcing that there will be a meeting in the COP at 1 o'clock, where this discussion can continue, I do now intend to continue with what we already have planned, the beginning of the high-level session and the list of speakers. Where is China? Okay. China, for a final remark before we move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the matter is not just procedural. Actually, it's a very serious issue. It's a substance. It's the respect of the host for the 92 parties. This is part in dream process. You can't just put forward some text from the sky. And we have agreed before this meeting that the only legitimate basis of negotiations on the outcome of Copenhagen is the output, is the outcome of the working group, LCA and KP. And this is not a very simple matter. It's not just obstructing the progress, the proceedings of the meeting. We all came here with a very strong determination to make Copenhagen a success. But we need to, in order to achieve that, we need to have a very just process. That is very important. We think that would actually, if the move by the presidency to put forward the text before we have the COP to hear the report of the ad hoc working group on LCA, that would in effect is tantamount to obstruct the process and would very much endanger the successful outcome in Copenhagen. This is not the last word. I think this we need to have some discussions of this before we could proceed any further. Thank you.
Those exchanges between developing country parties and the Danish Prime Minister continued for over half an hour before the speeches by the heads of state were able to begin. The second speech by Meles Zenawi, Prime Minister of Ethiopia, was another bombshell on the conference. The African group here at the talks has been headed by Algeria, which has expressed a strong negotiating position. As the heads of state section of these talks opened, it appeared that a Western stooge had been parachuted in to replace him. Here's Prime Minister Zenawi announcing the apparent coup in his speech.
Ethiopia is deeply honoured to have been chosen to be the spokesman of Africa on climate change and to lead the common negotiating team. I am immensely proud to be able to speak today not on behalf of my country, Ethiopia, but on behalf of Mother Africa as a whole.
Next, Zenawi announced a dramatically weakened negotiating position on finance. Only last Friday, the African group had made a comprehensive formal submission here under the Bali Action Plan, or LCA track, including its proposal for rich countries to pay $400 billion a year from public sources into a fund to pay for adaptation and low-carbon development in developing countries. Zenawi was asking for just $50 billion a year. But the deal he had struck, he said, was a good one.
Your Excellencies, I know my proposal today will disappoint some Africans who, from the point of view of justice, have asked for full compensation of the damage done to our development prospects. My proposal scales back our expectation with regards to the level of funding in return for more reliable funding and a seat at the table in the management of any such fund.
Zenawi's apparent coup came a day after he had issued a joint statement with President Sarkozy and had received an early morning phone call from President Barack Obama. Demonstrating in the corridors here at the Bella Centre, African civil society reacted angrily to Zenawi's apparent coup.
One voice, one position. Libya. One voice, one position. Egypt. One voice, one position.
Tunisia.
One voice, one position.
Nigeria.
One voice, one position.
Liberia.
One voice, one position.
Ghana.
One voice, one position.
Sierra Leone.
One voice, one position.
Togo.
One voice, one position.
Africa.
One voice, one position.
Africa.
One voice, one position.
Africa.
One voice, one position.
Cameroon.
One voice, one position.
Egypt.
One voice, one position.
Madagascar.
One voice, one position.
Ghana.
One voice, one position.
One Africa.
One voice, one position.
One Africa.
One voice, one position.
Indivisible Africa.
One voice, one position.
Indivisible Africa.
One voice, one position.
One voice, one position.
One voice, one position.
A politically binding deal which is being pushed by Nicolas Sarkozy, hiding behind African ends of states, to us is very unfair, and we are not going to allow Africa to be divided by some industrialized countries. That is our position, and we stand here to condemn that with the strongest terms possible. So I think the global community is standing by us. The moon, you can see, is that all of us, the African group, all other groups, the G77, are for a legally binding deal. We want an outcome which is a two-track outcome, and there is nothing less than that. And that is our stand up to now. We know it is a very trying moment for us. We know there are a lot of manipulations going around. We know there are a lot of cult dangling going around. But that should not be accepted at all.
Can I clarify? You were making some allegation that Sarkozy was trying to split the African group.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell me why you say that?
Yeah, the statement he issued with the Ethiopian head of state was not sanctioned by the Conference of African Heads of State. So that bilateral engagement is what we are opposing. Because if we want to oppose Africa, let him come through the structures which are there. We know it is not only the Saracos alone, but there are many others. Industrial is part of that industrialized countries who are bent on breaking the G77, and they are using any other means, and that is part of it.
Security here has been tightening now that the heads of state are here. Frederica Whitehead recorded these reflections.
It's 10 a.m. on Thursday, the 17th of December, and this is the penultimate day of the conference here in Copenhagen. Or it would be if we thought the talks were going to finish tomorrow. It doesn't feel like this is over yet, and there's rumours in the corridors that the talks might be extended until Saturday. This is annoying a lot of people in the press room who've got flights booked home on Friday and people who want to get home and see their children, but I don't know, it just doesn't feel like it's done yet right now. There's so much that's unresolved and so many sticking points in the talks themselves. Anyway, I wanted to give you a flavour of the atmosphere here inside the talks. I know that Tom and Arthur have been doing sterling work covering the activities outside the Bella Centre. The big demonstration yesterday was obviously a major news event, and I know that they have covered that quite extensively, so I just wanted to give you a bit of an idea of what was going on inside as well. The tension here inside yesterday was huge. It was a very, very tense situation. There was an impromptu security clampdown, which meant tens of thousands of people with accreditation were refused access to the talks. These were civil society groups, community observers, NGOs, as well as industry lobbyists. Although there was some rumour that maybe the industry lobbyists weren't being clamped down on quite so hard. I did try and gather some facts and figures, and it did appear that they were certainly a few more of them still in the building yesterday than the NGOs. Anyway, these people who couldn't get in crowded outside the building for hours, clamouring to get in. They were, you know, queuing for 8, 9, 10 hours. I came out the building 10 o'clock at night. That people were still trying to get in because it is a 24-hour thing here. There was a big ruckus inside. There was with people walking out because they realised that their colleagues couldn't get in and they didn't see any point in them being in because they couldn't actually do anything. So there was a big official march out about 10 a.m. and some delegates actually walked out of the talks in solidarity. It was very, very tense. There was a lot of shouting, pushing, shoving, lots of security, both inside and outside of the centre in the kind of compound area. I was able to get in because I've got a press pass. Only a small number of press passes were ever given out, so these haven't been subject to further reductions. The people who faced the clampdown were the NGOs, the civil society groups, the community observers. This seems crazy because these are the people that really know stuff. These are the people that live in or represent the communities that are really suffering from climate change. Their presence in the building sharpened the focus of the talks. You might have heard some of the testimonials I recorded earlier in the week. One in particular sticks in my mind like a splinter of glass. It was the interview with Hapta Mariam, the farmers' representative from Ethiopia. I was a bit jaded when I spoke to him. I'd interviewed almost 30 people before him. I was just doing endless fox-popping. And it was getting really monotonous. That's a press conference tannoy going on there. I'm just going to ride it out. We're about to go on air, so I haven't got time to record this, so you're getting that as well. Anyway, I'll go back to the beginning of the sentence. It was the interview with Hapta Mariam, the farmers' representative from Ethiopia. I was very jaded when I spoke to him. I'd interviewed almost 30 people in a line before him. I was trying to, you know, in a hurry to get the show out. I just wanted to get someone to get to the point, and he certainly did get to the point. I asked him a fairly trite question. I said, "How has your community been affected by climate change?" And he gave me a snap answer. He said, 10 people in my village died in one day from malaria. We did not have malaria in our area before the climate changed. It's right that Hapta Mariam came to Copenhagen so that he could look the delegates in the eye and tell them the facts. Barring NGOs and civil society observers from the building yesterday seems to imply that the UNFCCC has missed the point. Last night it snowed quite heavily. I arrived at the Bella Centre this morning and there were far fewer people trying to get in. Now it's pretty much just the press and the delegates. For a couple of hours this morning, there was another ruckus in the press room as we were shut in. We weren't allowed out into the building. We were, you know, escorted into the press room and then the doors were shut, effectively. And they said, oh, no, you can't go out. It's not safe. But that seems to have changed now. But there aren't very many people left in this building. It's us and the delegates. We're not allowed to watch the delegates in the discussions. We can only hear the results of the discussions when they choose to come out and go into the press conference room. But we will be here for the next 2 days and we will be sitting in that press conference room fairly constantly and asking as many people as we can what's going on, and we will keep you posted.
To end today's show, we have a sequence of audio boos from Tom Besley, giving a street-side angle on the events here in Copenhagen. Tune in again tomorrow and catch up with shows you may have missed by visiting www.climateradio.org. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Tom for Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm standing outside the Climate Forum and I bumped into a group of about seven women who are dressed in big, heavy, baggy leopard prints suits. They're also wearing foam Madonna-esque pointed boobs and big, colourful straw headdresses. I'm here with Gigi, who's going to talk a little bit about why they're here. So what's the name of your group?
Well, the group of us is Loucas de Pedra Lilás. It's a Brazilian group from Recife, northeast of Brazil. And we split the group in two. One is in Brazil doing the same thing than us. And here there are a lot of other international Loucas because there are compañeras, from other women from Bolivia, Colombia, Mexico, mm-hmm. Uruguay, and also Austria, Switzerland, and French.
So it's a truly international group. What themes are you exploring with this particular protest? Why have you chosen these costumes?
Okay, we want to say very strongly that there is no climate justice without gender and social justice. Okay. Our struggle is to have a sustainable planet, but also a very just and fair one. And we are in a struggle, anti-capitalistic struggle. Nah?
So it's a very broad approach that you're taking.
Yes.
In particular, can you give some examples of where you feel gender is directly related to the climate change problem?
Well. There's a lot of studies, and we know in the real life that the women are the one who more suffer of the climatic changes, because they are still responsible of the domestic work and the little and the elderly. They are in no places where the decisions are taken. They are not allowed to take decisions, and they are left behind. And we want to say that the policies, every policies must be aware of that. And the woman will not let them be invisible or, you know, forgotten in this great issue that is to save our planet.
So one last thing, what do you hope will come out of these talks? What are you most fighting for?
The emissions down, women's rights up. We said
emissions down, women's
rights
up.
Okay. Yeah, we've a lot of women of a feminist movement or a gender movement. We say that emissions down, women's rights up.
Yes. Yeah. Gigi, thank you very much and best of luck with everything.
And thank you to you. Bye.
Bye bye.
Sorry for my English, but
don't worry. No. It's better than my Spanish, huh? Okay, hi, this is Tom. I'm down at the candy factory again. And as I arrived, there were police officers here, and they've asked to check 5 bikes in here to see if any of them are stolen. Everyone's very calm. I think very confident that there shouldn't be any problems, but this kind of attention is representative of the attitude that the Danish police have been having. I think probably in the run-up to the big Reclaim Power march tomorrow, for example, last night in Christiania, we had really conflicting reports. We turned up and there were police barricades and helicopters and streams of dogs lining the streets, and we couldn't actually get anywhere near the place. But yeah, this is
the Bike Block is a collaboration between the Laboratory of Insurrectionary Imagination and the Climate Camp, the UK Climate Camp for Action. The Laboratory of Insurrectionary Imagination is a group of artists, a small group of artists and activists, and they kind of throw a spark, like a little spark, into a collective process. And if that spark takes, they help blow that spark until that spark becomes collective. And when that spark collective, they actually, in a sense, let go. I think what's important is to constantly have new forms of protest, new means. For me, as an artist, modern art began with Courbet organising the pulling down of the Vendôme column. You know, it was Courbet, the inventor of realism, stopped painting, you know, the priests, the kings, the aristocracy, and said, I'm going to paint the poor people. But then when the Paris Commune happened, the kind of uprising in Paris 1871, many of the artists left. You know, Pizarro, Monet, they all ran away from the Commune, went and lived in their little chalets. And Courbet said, no, I'm going to stop painting and I'm going to organise. And for me, that's what artists should be doing in times of revolutionary change and times of crisis. They should actually be organising, putting their creativity into organising new forms of protest, new forms of action, new forms of organising, new forms of social relationships, new forms of living, new, you know, forms that are kind of post-capitalist forms. I think the role of the artist today is to actually create post-capitalist forms. That's both forms of resistance, but also forms of actually alternatives to everyday life, to economy, to love, to consumption, to energy or whatever. So why bikes? Because they move. I think what, you know, we win when we're always fluid, when we're always moving. The police, you know, the classic police strategy is to kettle people, to actually surround people and to block them. So if we're constantly moving, it's much harder for them to do that. Also for us, bikes are, you know, both an alternative as well. So for us, you know, every form of resistance should be prefigurative, should embody the alternatives within themselves. We don't believe in separating means and ends. So the bike itself is a beautiful alternative to travel. It's the most, as Ivan Illich says, you know, it's the kind of pinnacle of technological progress in terms of the relationship between body and movement. You can't get better, in a sense, than the bike. The reason we chose bikes for this project also was, in permaculture, one of the key things is what is the local abundant material. You know, so when you go somewhere, you know, setting up permaculture community or a project, what is the local abundant material? Well, we were like, bikes. It's the local abundant material in Copenhagen. There are thousands of discarded bikes. In 4 days, we managed to pick up about 400 bikes.
Okay, so could you give a little insight into the structure of the action tomorrow, whether or not people will be splitting into groups and how these groups will kind of interact with each other?
So again, for us, you know, movement and decentralization, absolutely key, always moving. You know, in a sense, you know, I would define myself probably as an anarchist or a post-anarchist, post-capitalist anarchist, green post-capitalist anarchist, whatever. Don't like ists or isms particularly, but you know, one of the keys there is flow, because as soon as flow stops, power becomes concentrated. And also to never centralize power, and that comes down to actions as well. The police find it very difficult if they have to split into many, many groups to deal with you. So the more decentralized you are, the more powerful you are. So we'll be doing a swarm, what we're calling swarm, and all this is a very big experiment. This has never been done before. So for us, we see this as the beginning of something, you know, that we'll do more of, I hope. But so the idea of the swarm is it's little affinity groups of people who work together, maybe 8 or 10 people together, who share a form of action, share a politics, share a kind of a tactical, their tactical desires, and they will create a swarm. They'll have a navigator, they'll have a communicator, they'll have a communications person. So navigator, communicator, a spokesperson, different roles. And those swarms will each take a quadrant on the day and try and hit the fence at different points. And then occasionally those swarms will come together as a hive. So the political context of this day is incredible. basically, it's the Reclaim Power Day, 16th of December. I think it takes, you know, I've been working in the anti-globalization movement since the beginning. I was part of Reclaim the Streets and so on, part of the early days, the kind of pre-anti-globalization movements. And Seattle was, you know, the moment the spotlight came out onto the movement. But what's interesting about Copenhagen is there's a possibility here of taking it one step further on the 16th. In Seattle, what happened is people around the conference center enabled the people in the conference center to kind of disobey, to walk out, to refuse to sign the agreement. The people from the Global South, people with less power. What's going to happen here is the people in the Global South are actually going to walk out as well. It creates a third space. So the people from the Global South will be walking out. Loads of delegates will be walking out, maybe hundreds, maybe some government delegates. There'll be disruptions within the center, whilst the people are coming on foot, but also on bikes, and trying to get into the northeast corner and break down the fences non-violently and to hold a people's assembly in the northeast car park. So the role of the bike block within that is to basically facilitate that by drawing off the police from the northeast corner. So we'll be coming in, swarming in, drawing off, then going into a hive, going somewhere else to distract them, and then coming back and so on. So that's the idea. A lot of it requires communication, and we've been doing trainings and so on.
It's a very poetic vision, and it provokes images of obviously like birds flying together, and the kind of emergent consciousness that comes out of people working in a group. It kind of, you're more than the sum of your parts. Is that something that you feel bike blockers will realise from working in this way that might contribute to other actions which maybe take place on foot and not on bikes?
We're very inspired by the way ecosystems work, the way natural systems work. We use permaculture a lot in our processes, of design. And so one of the things that's always fascinated me is emergent intelligence of, you know, if a flock of birds, as you say, you know, an individual bird, if it's going towards a pylon and it turns, it will turn slower than if it's doing it as a flock. So there's a kind of emergent intelligence coming from which is greater than the sum of the parts. What we're saying in the bike block is, you know, a lot of it's about awareness and sensitivity, to be really sensitive to the people around you. It's about de-individualizing yourself or re-individualizing yourself as part of the collective. It's about becoming so sensitive to yourself and the collective that you kind of become a body. I think, you know, the movement of movements from which we come already understood that in terms of networks. You know, already, you know, the way ants work, the way bees work and so on, that's already been kind of theorized and then put into practice in terms of new technologies and networks theory and stuff like that. But I think it's interesting to try and do it on the street with bodies.
So ahead of tomorrow's action, have you got any reservations about the police?
Police have been raiding spaces. They've been arresting organizers. I mean, 1,400 or 500 people have already been arrested over the last 3 days. It's an incredibly interesting form of repression, because it's not repression Genoa style. I mean, I was at Genoa, there it was repression through absolute fear and brute violence. Here it's actually repression through a psychological, it's much more psychological. They're basically showing us how well prepared they are, how powerful they are, and how well organized they are. And they're basically saying, you do anything, we arrest you, we put you in the cage.
Bueno, que...
What we want is that the government has the responsibility of making an agreement, making in favour of the people, considering what we produce, considering our children that suffer, considering old people that suffer from hunger and deteriorating quality of life. Many have had to migrate because their land is no longer productive due to greater droughts or floods due to climate change.
Agricultura industrial. Agricultura industrial. Ganadería industrial. Ganadería industrial.
Tune in to Copenhagen Daily every day from 11 a.m. till noon throughout the UN Climate Conference on Resonance 104.4 FM and online at resonancefm.com.